Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
Welcome to The Fighter's Voice. If you're listening to us on iHeart or Univision, please download this episode. The more downloads you get, the more airtime I get next week on the network. You know, tonight is a tremendous show for me. You know, when you think of the sport, there's very few names that come to mind. And I got to tell you, you know, our guest tonight is truly one of them. He's considered one of the greatest light heavyweights of all time. Was one of the most tremendous fighters in my eyes that ever graced the octagon. With that being said, let's welcome Chuck the Iceman Liddell. Chuck, how you doing, brother?
Thank you for having me.
Oh, truly, truly honored and blessed. You know, we did a live feed last week, and we kind of touched on a subject that I kind of want to start my aspect of the interview off on, you know, because I'm in my 50s, and life has a lot of relevance. You know, we got to talking about your grandfather before we froze and you had to get to the airport. You know, how much intent and perseverance and pride did your grandfather instill in Chuck Liddell?
You know, I give him count for, well, him and my mom. But, you know, he taught me to work. He taught me to, you know, taught me that I could do anything I wanted to, about anything I put my mind to. You know, he always believed in me. Taught me to believe in myself all the time. And, you know, he didn't care, you know, win, lose, or draw, as long as you never quit. You gave it your best, you went out there and did your best. He was good with that.
Would you say that, looking back in that aspect, that that's what truly gave Chuck Liddell that intent that he needed to make that walk to the cage each and every time in every aspect?
Well, I mean, it made me the man that I am. I mean, it's, you know, I learned all. I was always the guy that got the coach's award. I was always the guy that outworked the guy next to me. I was always the guy that was willing to put in all that extra time and effort to achieve my goals. So that drive I got from him, and that, you know, and I think a lot of the feeling of I've never really feared fighting anyone or you know, getting in front of anyone, fighting anyone. I've never felt that because I always felt if I was fighting them, what's fear going to do? Why? How's that going to help you any? It's not. So, I, you know, I go in there relaxed and ready to fight anybody who comes in front of me.
Yeah. You know, I know we're going to talk about the Tito Ortiz fight tonight. My show kind of takes different angles, approaches. It's called The Fighter's Voice because we like to share you in a different retrospect than what other shows do. That's what makes my show different. You know, I kind of want to look back to UFC 49, your fight with Vernon White. You know, to me, that was one of the toughest wars, I think, that defined Chuck Liddell. Would you say it's a fair analogy looking back at that fight with Vernon White?
Man, Vernon's one tough guy, man. He took a lot of punishment in that fight before he went down. And that last punch broke his orbital. That's what put him down. He's a tough fighter. And you know, that fight was a long time coming. We were supposed to fight in some Indian casino up north. And, you know, I told him it wasn't enough money. And he started talking trash about I was dodging him. I said, you know what, fine. I'll fight you winner take all. I'll take your show money. And I guess he said something about he had to buy tires. And so it wouldn't work. And then it was actually the first fight Dana was working on for me. Dana White was trying to get me a fight in King of the Cage with Vernon White. And again, they sent me a contract that said $2,000 or $4,000, $2,000 to show, $4,000 to win. And Dana thought it was two and. He told me it was two and four. So he thought it was two to show, $6,000 to win. And when I got the contract, I'm reading it. I called Dana up. I said, Dana, this says $2,000 or $4,000. No, he's like, no, it's $2,000 plus $4,000. I said, no, that's not what the contract says. You might want to call. So he called him, and they said no. And he said no. And he's like, Chuck's not doing it. And again, Vernon started talking trash about how I was dodging him and I wouldn't fight him and I wouldn't. I'm like, you know what? call him back up. I'll fight him, winner take all. I'll take his show money, so I'll do 0 or 6. And he, again, turned that down again. So finally, this was when I got my chance to fight him in the UFC, and I made him pay for it.
You sure did. I'm going to toss the question over Barry, and then I'll come back in a second. Barry?
Actually, I like him. I met him after. I talked to him after. Me and him are cool now, but he was one of two guys I didn't like in MMA. Now there's only one left.
And, you know, I'm glad you said that, because that kind of segues into my question, Chuck, that I wanted to ask you. Take us back to the first time that you ever met Tito and kind of your initial impressions and reactions of a younger Tito Ortiz.
Oh, you know, I met him a long time ago when Scott Adams was my partner, was a real good leg lock guy. And he was rolling with Tito down south somewhere, and he leg locked him a bunch of times. And it was right before Tito was going to fight Frank Shamrock. So he asked Scott to come down and help him, teach him how to defend those leg locks. And Scott said, well, why don't you come down with me, and we can work with him, and you help with stand up. And so that's how we started training together. You know, me and him started training back then. And, you know, I knew he was a fighter, and he seemed all right. He seemed like an all right guy. He was cool. I you know, wasn't my style of guy. He's a little loud and a little crazy, but, you know, that's okay. Everyone's different. But
right.
I didn't have anything against him back then, and that, you know, so I helped him out for a few years as a sparring partner.
Yeah.
Trust me, I'm not like he makes it sound like I'm like he took me out the street, taught me how to fight, fed me, and then I turned on him. You know, I'm a turncoat. So I think I heard someone say he said. I think it's pretty hysterical, but I mean I was his sparring partner at best, and sparring partners end up fighting all the time. You know, it just. And actually, if you want to look back at it, when it was coming up to fight Tito the first time, I fought on 37 and a half. I fought Vitor, right? And I beat Vitor. He gets in the ring and jumps in and talks about him. He's going to kick my ass after he's done with Ken, correct? So right after that, so he fights Ken Shamrock right after that. And all of a sudden, he's like, I guess we probably have to fight somewhere else because we're not getting enough money. We got to go. All of a sudden, he doesn't want to fight me anymore. He's not so eager to kick my ass anymore. So, I mean, he knew I was a bad matchup for him, and that's why he started making this big this plea, which he still sticks to, that we are too good of friends to fight, and I'm a turncoat and whatever else I am.
Now, you know, back then Tito was the poster boy of the UFC, without a doubt. And I'm originally from Ohio, and like, you know, Randleman and Coleman and Adam DeSabato, all those guys around that time. And, you know, you're having conversations with people and things like that. And I was a young kid, and, you know, the promotional machine, like I said, was behind Tito. So I thought, man, Tito's like the man. And, you know, I was rudely corrected, and they said, no, Tito just has the best bodyguard in the business, because look at all the killers that should get title shots, but instead they got to fight Chuck Liddell first. And then they don't get that shot because Chuck knocks them down. And then there's the reason why Elvis Senasek, who was 4-3, got a title shot, and Vladimir Matyshenko and guys like that. Did you realize that, or you were just in the moment and were fighting whoever?
No, I was just in the moment. I'd fight anybody they put in front of me, and I actually would ask for the harder fights. So I thought it would get me closer to getting a title shot.
Right, and you know, it actually just let Tito hold on to the belt a lot longer than he probably should have had it. Because, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I remember going to they were kind of protecting him for a little while, because I remember when he was going to go fight Evan Tanner, and everyone was all nervous about the fight coming up and talking about it, and I'm thinking to myself, like, what's going on? Has anyone seen the tapes on this guy? Like, this guy's small, and what's he going to do to Tito? Like, it's not, he's, no disrespect to Evan, he just wasn't, I mean, he was out of his size range, you know, he's a good 185 pounder, but he wasn't,
right.
But at 205, he was just too small.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like,
See, like, Kevin got the, you know, he had just lost the heavyweight title to Randy, and normally when a guy does that or drops down a weight class, he gets that title shot, but it's like Tito isn't going to out-wrestle Randleman, so give him Chuck and let Chuck beat him, and then let Tito have, you know, Elvis Senasek or whoever, you know. But
yeah, well, and then, you know, Dana asked me, he's like, well, hey, you know, if you fight Randleman and you beat him, you're going to fight Tito after. I said, perfect. You know, I mean, a title shot after, perfect. You know,
right.
I that works for me. He's like, we can't dodge it anymore. I'm like, I wasn't trying to dodge it in the first place. I was just waiting my time to get my title shot. I figured I just needed a couple more wins.
Yeah, and see, to me, once you beat Randleman, you were the number one contender, and that was in 2001. And I know you fought Randy for, like, the interim title, but you didn't actually get a shot at the legit belt until 2005. So you were, like, the number one contender just biding time for, like, 4 years, which is unheard of.
Right. It is what it is. I mean, it got us here. I mean, it actually all turned out, worked out right, and, you know, it was a great journey, great, great ride, man. It was a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
Yeah, truly.
And go ahead, Don. Go ahead, bud.
I just want to jump in here real quick because, you know, we look at the old days of you, Chuck, and what you did for the sport. Nobody else can emulate. You know, you truly are, in my eyes, I mean, I've been in the sport for 23 years. You truly are the GOAT, man, the greatest fighter of all time. If you look at what you've done theoretically, nobody has done what you've done. You know, as we talked about on the live feed, you know, you retired in 2009. Or no, you got inducted in the Hall of Fame in 2009. You retired in 2010. Sitting back for the last 8 years, how has Chuck Liddell perceived the sport?
You know, I love watching the growth of the sport. There's a lot of great fighters out there, a lot of fun. I mean, I'm not much for the trash talking, but, you know, and it's kind of big now, but it's you know, if it brings in people that wouldn't normally watch the fights, it's great. I don't mind it. You know, if that makes it more interesting for people, as long as they're great fighters fighting and it's a great, the show is still great, the content's still great, it doesn't bother me so much. And I think the content's been great. There's been a lot of great fights that, you know, for a little while, you saw some guys playing it safe for a while. It started getting be like that, do just enough to win each round and take it easy. But I think it's actually come around where it's starting to get guys who want to be exciting. They want to make it big, and they want to be, so they're trying to be more excited. So they're trying to finish fights again. So I think it's been some there's been some great fights lately.
Yeah, you know, there truly has. And you know, I don't think that a lot of the aspects of the new sport will ever emulate the grit and grind fighters of yourself, you know, in the era that you come from. You know, I've had Coleman on. I've had, you know, Todd Medina. I've had Paul Verlins. And you look at the aspects of where you guys come from and what you've correlated in the aspect of the sport. It truly defined it. I mean, I admit there's been some great fights, but, you know, I think the entertainment aspect has thoroughly taken over some parts of some promotions, and me being an old-timer in the sport has truly been a downside, in my opinion. You know, you've had these years to think about it. What did it mean for Golden Boy Promotions to jump into MMA and have Chuck Liddell on a card against an opponent that you truly don't like?
Well, I mean, it's a great opportunity to try this model for MMA. You know, it's a model that pays the top fighters a lot bigger percentage of what is made. from the fight. So we have a there's a big upside to it if we, you know, if the fight's successful.
Yeah. You know, one thing I have noticed via social media, via my demographics and things like that, that most of the fans nowadays want the older aspects of the sport to come back. They truly feel that what you guys had brought to the sport can't be duplicated, you know, and I happen to be one of them people. You know, a lot of people are calling for some of the greats to come back to the sport. What will this moment mean for Chuck Liddell making this historic epic walk to face Tito Ortiz?
You know, it's going to be a great moment for me to get out there and go and prove all these people wrong and prove that I can still fight the way I can. And for hopefully for the other athletes in this sport, it'll put out a new platform where they can make more money at the top end of the sport, where there is a bigger home run at the end. And that's where, I mean, it'd take a long way for me to get into all of what I think about the how the what's better, the NFL version of the sport, where you've got the UFC and then with all the biggest players in it. You know, for me, to some extent, as a fan, that's kind of what you want. You want an NFL. But then again, they need to be employees, they need to be a union. You know, it needs to be, because there needs to be a better distribution of the wealth. But on the other side, as a fighter, you know, we kind of like that boxing model. You always want, you look at it, I'm going to be the best in the world one day. I want to make, you know, $20, $30 million a fight. I want to make this huge amount of money at the end. And I like to see the end of the rainbow be huge. I'm not as worried about getting paid as well on the way up. I want that home run to be there. So which model do you want, you know? But I think one way or another, we need to push it to where the fighter's getting a better proportion of the pay.
I have to agree with you, sir. I truly do. Barry?
Yeah. Now, Chuck, when you retired, I think it's pretty well documented that you didn't really want to go at that time. How difficult was it for you to come to terms with basically someone else was kind of pushing you out the door and bringing you to where we are now, where you are making your own decision, like, this is my time right now?
Yeah. You know, it's one of those things. People always ask me about that. Should this fighter quit, man? Should he hang it up? I'm like, no, that should be the fighter's choice. When you're ready to hang it up, you're ready to, you know it when you're ready to hang it up. I'm actually glad I had some time off to think about it. I wish I hadn't taken so much time off. But, you know, I'm back in shape. I'm ready to go. And I'm excited to show people I can still perform. I can still get out there and make things happen. It's gonna be a good night.
Now, are you at all concerned with the chance that Tito pulls out with an injury or something like that, as he's done in the past when you two are scheduled to fight?
You know, that can't say that hasn't crossed my mind. But that being said, you know, he's a partner in this. It's not in it for him to do that. You know, it'll cost him big to do that. So I don't think he's gonna do it. And I mean, it's his last chance to get a shot at me. I think it's really bugged him. You know, I took that poster boy status from him. I think I took that. He feels like I took what he should have had, and I did. I think deep down he feels like I took his thunder. I took where he should have been, and I ran away with it. And now this is his chance to make that right in his eyes. I mean, I think it's kind of weird to keep saying I'm a shell of the man I used to be, so he's going to beat me, because that makes it sound like I need to be a shell of the man I used to be for him to beat me, which he's going to sadly find out I'm not. So, I mean, it is pretty hysterical, though. I'm like, is that really what you're trying to push, that I'm a shell of the man as I used to be, so now you have a shot at beating me? I mean, what the hell did you thought that one? I don't think you thought that one through.
No, I don't think he truly has. You know, Chuck, you know, we're gonna jump all around the place because there's so much added, you know, that you've added to the sport and that you've created. You know, you're widely credited with bringing MMA into the mainstream of America. What does that type of aspect being said about you truly mean to Chuck Liddell, not just the warrior, but the man?
Well, sorry, I missed that. I think my phone was Go ahead and say that one more time.
I said, you're widely credited with bringing MMA into the mainstream of American sports. I said, what does that mean to you, not just as a warrior, but as a man?
You know, I really don't think about it that way. I like that people think that I brought this to the mainstream. I just feel like I went out and fought the way I love to fight, and I'm glad the fans loved it. The fact that I got to help grow a sport and all the things that I've done, it just helped me. You know, it's great. It's a great feeling to know that I've been there, and I have all these memories and times of cruising around promoting this sport and trying to get off the ground and launching it into where it is today. I mean, I love this sport. It's a great sport. We always thought it would get here. It was going to take some time to get here. You know, it's getting exposed to more people and more people seeing it. I think it'll just keep growing.
Yeah, you know, I have to agree with you. You know, they call me the Verbal Walters of MMA, like I told you. So I'm going to kind of ask you a question from the early days. You know, coming from that single family home, you know, how much did it mean to you, Chuck, to create a path for you in life and develop that aspect that gave you the respect and the attitude that you needed to persevere and move forward in life?
You know, I grew up with my mom raising me, and we were poor, and I actually lived in my house with my grandparents. So we moved back in with my grandparents. So I actually had my grandma, my grandpa, and my great grandma for a while, and then my mom. So I had quite a few parents there, not a single parent family. But you know, growing up with them and being close like that, and just, I mean, it helped mold the person I am for sure. I mean, it's just you know, I get asked that a lot. You know, you try to figure out. I'm always trying to teach my kids, and they're growing up, you know, privileged and having nice things and living in a nice neighborhood, and trying to teach them to grow up and learn to respect their toys and their stuff. And you know, it's a tough thing to do with your kids, you know, teaching them to grow up the way we grew up. But I, you know, people ask me all the time. I mean, I didn't have a rough life growing up. I mean, I had a great life. I mean, we weren't rich, we were poor, but we had a lot of love, a lot of support, a lot of belief. Nothing but you know, my family was all there for me all the time. My grandpa showed up to all my practices, my games, all my wrestling matches, karate matches, whatever I was doing, he was always there. You know, my mom was always, you know, working hard to give us whatever we needed to do our sports and do our school. So, you know, I had a great upbringing. I don't think there was any real struggle for me growing up.
Yeah, I understand that. You know, I come from the projects myself, and, you know, I got my master's in engineering science. I come a combat sports photographer, which is kind of ironic. But, you know, I'm still not rich because I'm still in a sport that doesn't pay me very much. I do it because I love it. You know, I kind of want to take you back to your UFC debut in 1998 at UFC 17 in Mobile, Alabama. You had a decision over Noel Hernandez. What did it mean for Chuck Liddell to finally get that opportunity to see your career get the respect that it needed?
Well, that was just awesome. That was actually my second fight in mixed martial arts. So I did a fight in Vegas, and an open hand striking fight, and someone asked me if I wanted to fight in the UFC, and that's why I fell in love with the sport. I mean, it's funny, I tell everybody to go back there. I got $1,000 to show up for that. And then it was an alternate to the tournament. And if you won the tournament, you got $20,000, I think, and $10,000 for second place. And I remember being in the back room after my first fight, winning my fight, and Dan Henderson was asking, man, my leg's hurting real bad, you know, from the first fight. What should I do? I was sitting there going, I'm the alternate. So, you know, I think you should probably, he's probably just not fight, bro. It's probably better you didn't fight. You know, it's probably going to feel, it's going to hurt. That's going to hurt you fighting. So you might want to just let it go, you know? And so I tried to talk him out of it, but I didn't. And he went on to win the fight. So it's good for him. But I was trying to get my money. So.
Yeah, I hear you there. You know, I'm going to ask one more question, then I'm going to toss it back to Barry and let him ask you a couple more. You know, you were associated with John Hackelman in the early days, the Pit Fight team. What are those days, when you look back over your shoulder, what do those days mean to you?
Oh, they were the greatest, man. I started training with John. We started training, back in, 92, 93? I go to his house 6 days a week, sit there, and we train for forever. I was kickboxing for a bunch of years before I started doing mixed martial arts. Then we started doing the mixed martial arts and started the pit fight. Well, we had a pit fight team from kickboxing, and we moved over to mixed martial arts. And you know, it's been great. He's like family to me. John's my he said he's my older brother. I thought he's grandpa to us.
I love that, you know, because I think the truest intent of a fighter is the people that stood beside them in their growth, and when they reflect back on it, they get to share that moment with my listeners and look back at it themselves. Barry?
Yeah, Chuck, you also were involved in the Vale Tudo, the bare knuckles against Jose Landis Johns. That was also the fight card where Vanderlei and Mike Van Arsdale, the oil on the legs. Coleman said he like toweled his legs off and like they were just glistening. But no time
he was
winner.
In the back taking them away from him. Yeah, I remember that. No, it was one 30-minute round.
Yeah, like how do you prepare yourself to know like there is no stopping? Like we're going for 30 minutes. Like how do you prepare for something like that?
You know, I was just training hard. I mean, we actually I would spar normal guys and we did three-minute round with 1 minute rest, but we didn't do the rest. Instead of the rest, I'd have my brother, who was 300 pounds, come after me and push me around and try to pummel with me and try to throw me around during that 1 minute. So I was trying to recover while I was wrestling and holding on to somebody, and then we get back and then go back to fighting again, sparring again, so... We did a lot of things to get ready for that, but I was in great shape going in. And it was interesting. That whole thing down there was interesting. We had cutting weight. Apparently they threw a shoulder at me in the locker room. Like, you wanted to fight me? I'm like, there's no one around here, guys. We get paid to do this tomorrow. You want to wait? You think maybe we can wait till tomorrow to do this, or do you want to do it right now? You know, it's like... And then I went out to fight, and the funniest part about that whole fight was I was walking out there. Nick Blomgren, one kick, was with me, and he was in the corner. And I get to the corner, back, we go walk out. We're both out in the ring, and we go to the corner. And I look back, and Pele's manager is still in the ring. I look at my corner. I took a look at Nick, and I go, hey, how come Pele's manager is still in the ring? And he goes, I think he's the referee. Don't worry about it. It'll be fine. His manager was the referee for the fight. It was pretty funny. Like, it's probably not a good idea, but all right, we'll do this anyway. We're already here. Might as well.
Right, as the deck's not stacked against you enough, you know, you got to deal with that.
Yeah,
now,
go ahead.
After your the fight with Vitor, 37.5, which we've had Pat Miletich on, and he's kind of told the story. there's a bunch of different stories for UFC 38 and what happened. But the one thing that kind of has never changed in anyone's story with the brawl in the alley is basically that Chuck Liddell backed into a wall and just was dropping everybody that was coming at him. What do you remember about that? And did, if you saw it, did Tito get knocked out by Lee Murray?
You know what? I hear all this stuff. But the funny thing is I didn't see anything about Tito to the end. Cause I came up, I looked left, and a friend of mine was had a guy double-legged against a car and was getting hit in the head by three guys. So I went over and I took care of, and I started pulling guys off and hitting guys and fighting over there. By the time when the cops showed up, as the cops showed up, I looked back and I saw Tito was being held back running towards where Lee Murray's guys are trying to take off to. And I grabbed the first girl I saw, put my arm around her and said, "Hey, we're going to go get some breakfast, okay?" And we just walked off, walked right by the cops. I think I was the only fighter not detained in that place. But I look back, and the thing I say is, okay, I look back, and Tito was on his feet going after him, trying to go after Lee Murray. So when he came out, I don't know if he got cold cocked and went down. And you got to remember, we're in dress shoes on the street. Everyone's right. Wearing dress shoes in the street. So, I mean, he could have just got hit and slipped and fell and got up. And, you know, I don't know because I didn't see him get hit. But all I can say is at the end, he was up and going after whoever he was mad at.
All right. Now, what to you, and I mean, you've had a long line of crazy wins, a lot, you know, like I said, the Hall of Fame career. What win do you treasure most?
Well, I mean, people ask me this all the time, and I had a lot of great wins, a lot of great fights, and it's so hard, but if I had to pick one, it'd be the second fight with Randy when I avenged a loss. I got, I avenged a loss. I got my, I finally got the belt I've been after for so long. And I was able to, I was able to celebrate and finally achieve that goal, you know. And so that was probably, and I got to do it in the way I like to do it, with a knockout early in the fight.
Right. Now, let me ask you one more question here, and then Don can have it. When you actually started, because you were on Entourage, and you did a lot of sitcoms and movies, et cetera, when you started making a little money, what was the first lavish purchase that you bought yourself?
Well, funny thing, when I felt it was a lavish purchase was I got an Expedition. I was driving around a 88 Ford Ranger that you had to put in clutch fluid every second time I went to the gas station to make sure the clutch wouldn't give out because I couldn't afford to fix it. But I fought Kevin Randleman and Guy Metzger in the same month, and I made enough money where I'd go out and buy myself a brand new to me. It was a used car, but. And I think I spent $11,000 on it, but at the time that was a huge lavish purchase for me. That was like a really cool looking. It had tinted windows and it was cool. You know, it had TVs in it, and I thought it was the coolest thing ever.
He was on Pimp My Ride.
You know, Chuck, I kind of want to take it just a different angle for a second, if you don't mind, sir. You know, because a lot of people have asked me when you come on the show if I could ask you where your name came from, but we know that Hackleman gave you your name. What was the basis of Hackleman giving you the name the Iceman, and what was the relevance to it?
He gave me that nickname when we were in a Strongbow.
I think
Arena.
It was just like second kickboxing match, wasn't it?
That was my third kickboxing match, and I was getting ready for the thing. We had to be there for like 5, and I was going to fight till like 9 at night. And so I was getting ready, and I was bored, so I went and slept. I'm in there, so I I went and slept. He went to go looking for me. He couldn't find me, and he found me sleeping on a tie pad in the corner. And he's like, "You don't get nervous before fights, do you?" And I woke up. No, why? Why should I? Was I supposed to? And ever since then, he's called me the Iceman, and that name stuck.
It's tremendous, you know, because you define the sport in such a way that, you know, if you don't know who Chuck Liddell is, and this is a disheartening aspect to me, you know, and I see it in boxing too. I bring out some of the greatest legends in boxing, and they say, go ask somebody that's competing in the sport today, and I bet you $100 they don't know who I am, even though we created the pathway for them. You know, I know that will never be the situation with you, Chuck, but do you see that aspect of the new era sport completely forgetting the path that was created for them by icons like you?
Well, I haven't noticed it, but I mean, you know, I really haven't asked that question to people. So maybe I will keep my eye out for it. I haven't noticed it, but, you know, I'm still pretty out there in the forefront of the sport. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's tremendous, you know, because you know, what you've done for the sport is crazy. I can't wait for November 24th. I think you're going to show the world that the Iceman is better in shape. You know, like I said on the live feed when we did it the other day, I think you look in better shape now than you did then. How is the aspect of Chuck Liddell as far as training, you know, where you're at? How do you feel comparative to 2009, 2010?
Well, I feel great. I mean, it's consistency. I'm consistently working out. I you know, I'm watching what I eat better. I'm eating better. And I think as you get older, one of the more important things is recovery. And one of those things, it's real important anytime you're an athlete and you're working out. But you tend to, when you're younger, you tend to let that slide and, you know, get away with a lot more. But biggest thing for me is staying consistent with my workouts and staying, you know, and build it on the recovery, and it's been working great. I think everything's firing well. I'm still hitting hard. I'm still moving fast. Like I said, Tito thinks I'm a shell of what I used to be, and I think he's gonna wish he was right when he sees me.
Well, in my opinion, I'm transparent, man. You know, I saw his fight with Chael Sonnen and Bellator, and he looked pathetic, even though he came out with a win. I don't think he has a chance in hell in beating you. It's my personal opinion. It's my show, so I'll give my thought. And if people don't like that, that's just tough shit. But you know, there was a certain part of your life that, you know, like Barry kind of brought up a little bit earlier. You took a sidestep into the acting. You know, and a lot of people don't realize, you know, like I said, I'm in my 50s, so The Postman Always Rings Twice was a very relevant movie in my time. What did it feel like for Chuck Liddell to get that certain type of aspect instilled into your career?
Well, that one was funny. The funniest part about that was, so I posted it one time, and in the underground, people were like, "I watched that whole movie. He wasn't in it. I watched that whole movie." One of my friends going, look, you morons, he was 11.
Yeah, right.
He didn't have a mohawk. He's definitely in the movie. You got to watch. So it was pretty funny. People were expecting me to be in a mohawk when I was 11. But I actually really like the movie side of it now. I mean, I really like doing movies, and I like it's everything's new. It's different, but even fighting is different in movies. It's a different way to fight. But it's interesting, and it's fun to learn for me. And I like to I've been working on getting better and better at acting. I work with coaches. I'm working on, I'm still planning on doing more movies, as they come.
Yeah. I mean, you were tremendous in War Pigs, but there was a documentary that was out there where you played yourself, and I think you should be given more credit for it. You did it in 2013. It was called Fight Life. You know, what did it feel like for Chuck Liddell to finally be able to emulate himself in an aspect that you truly love?
Well, I like being me. So, you know, that's always a fun way to do things, is it makes it real easy too. If you're acting a part where you're you, it makes it a lot easier. Although now I'm starting to have more fun playing parts that I don't think are me, like playing different characters. It makes it a change for me and more challenging.
Yeah. You know, I got a question in my green room from John from North Carolina. What he wanted to, and I usually don't do this, but, you know, I kind of want to know myself since you just kind of brought it up. He said, when did you feel it was relevant to create the Mohawk, and what drove you to do so?
You know, to be honest, we were, my friends and I, we were wrestling, and we were going to a Slayer concert, and everyone's going to, all these guys, my buddies are going to shave their heads, and I'd had a shaved head when I was a kid for a lot of years, and I didn't want to do that, so I said, no, I'm not shaving my head again. They said, you got to do something. I said, well, let's do a Mohawk. So I did a Mohawk, and it just kind of stuck. I really liked the haircut, and it's been there ever since. I had a Mohawk since about 92.
I love it. I'm going to pass it over to Barry, let him ask you a couple more, Chuck, and then I'll come back, and we'll kind of wrap things up here. Barry?
Yeah, Chuck. You know, being this is your third fight with Tito, you know, do you have a prediction on how the fight ends? Are you going to call your shot?
You know, I finished him in two, and I finished him in three. And we got a three-round fight, so all I got left is to finish him in one. So that's my goal this time, is to finish him in the first.
Now, a movie just came out Tuesday that you guys kind of did together, Silencer. Was there tension on the set, or were you guys not together, or what happened with that?
No, I didn't even know he was in it. Let's put it that way. 2 weeks before we were going to watch the premiere, a friend of mine sent me the poster, and I thought he photoshopped it and was messing with me. Because we shot it back in December, so the fight hadn't been set yet. But now it was set, and I really thought until I saw the trailer that my friend was really messing with me and just photos. I just said, "Hell yeah, whatever, man." I didn't think it was real. I thought he just put it on there because I didn't know anything about it. No one said anything to me. I had no idea he was in the movie, but it was funny. It's good timing for them. I mean, great. You know, we got the fight coming up, so they're getting some press on it, and it's a pretty good movie. You should check it out.
Absolutely, Chuck. I want to wish you the best, man. I appreciate your time tonight. It was definitely a pleasure. I look forward to getting to talk to you again sometime. Good luck in November. And Don will close it out, man. Thank you.
Thank you.
I just have a couple more questions for you, Chuck. You know, being that it is the return of the Iceman, how much relevance, you know, would you like to give to Dave Thomas for being in the corner of the Iceman and continuing the greatness of your career?
I love all the help he's given me, and him he's been there. He brought this to us, the Golden Boy thing, and it's been I think this is gonna be a success. So I'm really happy to have him in my corner, and we're ready to rock.
You know, one more relationship I want to ask you about, because it truly defined part of this aspect preparing for the fight, and that's with Tone, Antonio McKee. What had Chuck Liddell reach out to his brother Antonio McKee to kind of get a little tune-up out there at Team Body Shop MMA?
I tried out a few guys I wanted to work with, see who I was going to work with, and I really just clicked with Antonio. He runs a good program there, and I like a lot of the stuff he does. I mean, he understands my training schedule, my plan, and I think he's doing well for me. So expect some great things from me coming out of this.
Oh yeah, I've been repping Antonio for many years. He's a true brother of mine. You know, Chuck, if you had to make a statement to my listeners, to the fans of the Iceman, what they can expect come November 24th against Tito Ortiz, what would that statement be, my friend?
Expect speed, power and a quick knockout. Don't be disappointed if this is over really quick.
Don't blink. You know, Chuck, it truly was an honor to have you both on the live feed and now on my syndicated show. You know, this is kind of a hypothetical question before I let you get to your sponsors and get on with the rest of your evening. You know, how would Chuck Liddell like to be remembered when it's all said and done?
Hey, I just want to be remembered as a warrior. I mean, I go in there, I fight, with my, I put my heart out there. Every fight I go out to, and I'm going to come out there and give it my all. You know, I'm going to give it, I'm going to come after you, and I'm going to give you everything I got, and hopefully I end up victorious.
Yeah. You know, Chuck, in life, there's a lot of aspects that we leave out or we don't get the opportunities to give back and or to even express, you know, what things meant to us. You know, and in life, I feel it's a necessity on my show, you know, because there's people that stand beside us, they push us, they give us that intent. You already talked about your mother and your grandfather and your family. You know, if there's any others out there that have been in the career or the life aspect of Chuck Liddell that you'd like to give thanks to, who would that be, my friend, and what would those words be?
John's helped me, you know, from the beginning, from kickboxing to fighting MMA and through a lot of things, a lot of things through the years, and then John Hackelman and, you know, my wife. I mean, she pushes me all the time to be better, to get after and gets me motivated to do things. So definitely her and then my kids. I mean, they motivate me as much as anything. You know, I want them to see me be the guy that I am, the champion I am. I want them to see the lion that comes out there. They get to see me, you know, train hard, work hard, and perform. I'm excited about this.
You know what? We truly are. The world is anticipating November 24th, Chuck. You truly have created an aspect of what we love that nobody else can. You know, they say you could duplicate or replicate something, but you can't duplicate it. And I don't think they can ever duplicate another Chuck Liddell. You truly are the greatest of all time, and in my eyes and that of many others. You know, and this show goes to show you that you don't have to wear a $5,000 suit. I can't even speak tonight, a $5,000 suit to get a great interview. And I didn't pry into your pockets like Ariel Helwani did. You know, I had to take a jab at him because I'm his competitor. But, you know, Chuck, I'm going to hand the mic to you. If there's any sponsors, friends or family, any social media sites, or just anything else you'd like to add to the show, champ, the floor is yours, my friend.
Yeah, well, just stay tuned on all my social media. It's just at Chuck Liddell. You'll be seeing a lot of stuff soon.
Most definitely. I'll see you Friday, my brother. Thank you so much for humbling my listeners and my show. It truly has been an honor. I already know what's going to happen November 24th. So thank you so much, my friend. You have a tremendous evening, and God bless you.
Hey.
Man, Barry, I tell you what. Truly a humble, humble man.
Absolutely. He's never been one to basically talk a lot of trash on his opponent. He always let his fighting do the talking. And he's still being very respectful to Tito, even though, you know, Tito has not been the most respectful. But, you know, like I said, you got to eventually show up and do it face to face. So we'll see what happens.
I got to admit, and I don't care what anybody says, I did the live feed with him. I was nervous then. I'm doing the show with him tonight. I was even more nervous. But, I want to thank Dave Thomas, for correlating things, and he's going to be bringing other great fighters onto the format. I truly hope he enjoyed the show tonight. You know, I had to take a shot at Ariel. You know, I'm not going to try to pry into a fighter's pockets and find out how much they make. You know, I'd rather bring him on here and share different aspects of his life, different aspects of what he did in the ring, comparative to finding how much money he's going to make in a fight. That you're not doing a fighter justice by doing that. You're truly just trying to, you know, get something for the benefit of your own gains so you can post about it later. You know, what I took away from tonight's show was a man that truly loved the sport, a man that truly now has a reason to step back in. And I honestly, it's my show, like I said, I think he's going to knock Tito the fuck out. I don't know what your thoughts are, but what are your thoughts going into November 24th, Barry?
Yeah, you know, no matter who it is, fighter or anything, basketball, anything, there's always somebody that has your number. And it's I can't imagine getting knocked out twice by the same guy and then being 100% confident, I can beat this guy. You know what I mean? I can beat this guy. No matter what happens, I can beat this guy. And I think that's got to be a mental block on Tito, because, I mean, at the press conference, he's talking about age and stuff like that, and he always brings up George Foreman. Well, he also forgot that George Foreman also said the last thing to go was punching power, and last time I checked, you know, Chuck knocked him cold twice, so he better hope that that's not true anyway. So, or he's definitely in trouble. So, I think Chuck wins. I just, you know, like I said, he's just got Tito's number, and I can't see Tito getting over that.
You know, I truly can't either. You know, I think it's a fight that it's already over before it began. You know, what were your takeaways from tonight's show, hearing a humble legend? I mean, a lot of people don't understand that having somebody like Chuck Liddell express his thoughts and concerns, you know, and aspects about the sport, how humbling it truly is for people like me and you. What did it mean to you to be able to have this opportunity?
Oh, it was a tremendous opportunity. You know, like I said, I appreciated you, you know, asking me to come on with you and, you know, interviewing a guy of Chuck's stature. I mean, you know, like I said, he's one of the all-time greats. He's not just a great, he's an all-time great. It was definitely an honor. You know, Chuck, like, he's not one to go, oh, yeah, I did this, I did this, I did this. He kind of shies away from that because he's such a humble guy. But that's when you know you're good, is when other people are showering you with, you know, your accolades and things like that. So that even gets more respect when a guy isn't, you know, so arrogant or cocky or whatever. I mean, Chuck's a humble guy.
Yeah, he truly is. You know, I'm a little fanboyed out right now, man. I've done thousands and thousands. We've been doing, just me and you have been doing radio for 7-8 years, and I'm a little fanboyed out. That's pretty sad, Don. But, you know, it is what it is. I think it was a tremendous show. I probably could have kept it going a little bit longer, but when you have somebody of that magnitude right in the middle of a training camp, you really don't want to take too much of their time, you know, and for him to give us, you know, almost the hour that he did is truly tremendous. It's more than the 15 minutes that he got on Ariel Helwani, or 20 minutes, whatever it was. But, you know, I like sharing the fighters and their true integrity. And hopefully the listeners enjoyed the show tonight. If you did, go to Facebook, go to the Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire. Give us a like, give us a shout out. Let me know what you think about the show. My main man, you know, on my Legends in Boxing show, Mr. Barry Frost. Check him out on Facebook at Barry Frost. You know, Barry, is there anything else that you'd like to say before we end this episode tonight, son?
Yeah, no, I just I appreciate you having me on as usual. I appreciate Chuck coming on, like I said, giving us as much time as he did. I appreciate, you know, like you mentioned, Dave, Thomas, you know, basically trusting us and allowing us the platform to have a guy like Chuck on. So definitely much respect to him. And I appreciate all the listeners. And hope you guys keep listening. We'll have, you know, more big names and fighters on for you.
Oh, yeah, it's fitting to blow up, man. Somebody put something in the water, man. I don't know what it is, but good things are coming, and we're going to bring it all to you live here on the Fighter's Voice. On that note, I want to thank Finished MMA with Juan Martinez, the 86ers.net with Alfred and Freddie, Cutman for Hire with Jacob Stisteran, the one and only Jacob Stisteran, and Juan Ramirez, Bite Me Mouth Guards with Joe Rice. You know, truly a man that I appreciate, because he makes all the mouth guards for the UFC and Bellator, but you'll never hear him brag about it. And that's how life should be, man. Do it with the greatest intent without exploiting what you do. And all four of my sponsors are great in that aspect. And I also want to give a major thank you to the United Way and the United Way Merced for backing the show. Without all of these people, we couldn't bring a show to you. On that note, I want to wish everybody a tremendous evening. You can follow me on Facebook at Don McGuire. You know, I can't give you a friend request because I'm maxed out. But on that note, we're going to do a commercial break, and then we're going to end up with a little bit of music. But on that note, thank you, Barry. You have a tremendous evening. To all the listeners, good night, and God bless.
What up, it's your boy Sloan Bone of the Mo Thugs Movement, part of the Bone Thugs and Harmony family tree, the 86ers brand ambassador. Check it out, though. Listen, in the world full of followers, be proud to be different. Be an 86er. So what I need y'all to do is go to the 86ers.net. We got the dopest apparel, men and women, everything you need for a fresh start. I'm talking tees, zip-ups, tanks, hoodies, and the best hat.
At a price nobody can match.
I'ma ask you this though. What do your clothes say about you? If you don't know, come to the 86ers.net and find yourself out. And a special shout out to Don McGuire, the host of the Fighter's Voice. Salute, big homie.